My name is Christopher Bates. I'm the director of the Pacha. Applause. Now, it's really great to have all of you here this morning. And a very, very warm and special welcome to all the new members of the Pacha. Thank you for agreeing to be a part of this body. We are definitely going to give you a lot of work over the next few years. It's going to be an exciting time for all of us, I'm sure. To get this morning started, I'd like to introduce to you the director of the White House Office on National AIDS Policy, Jeff Crowley.
Good morning. My name is Jeffrey Crowley. I'm the director of the Office of National AIDS Policy, so it's my privilege to welcome you to the White House. We're very happy to hold our first meeting of the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS during the Obama administration. So this is an important day. We're happy to have all our new members of PACHA, and we're happy to welcome you, but we're also really glad to have, you know, our top leaders on HIV AIDS with us. Secretary Sebelius, we're glad for you, Dr. Koh. And of course, our new chair of the council, Dr. Helene Gayle. So I just wanted to make some brief remarks about where we're going as far as HIV/AIDS policy from the White House perspective. So obviously, yesterday, you know, the president released his budget proposal for next year. It's clearly tight. I'd say a couple things that the president came into office facing really unprecedented challenges, and we've taken unprecedented steps to really get the economy back on track. And I think he's committed moving forward to really make the tough calls necessary to, you know, create jobs and get our economy moving on the short term, but also take the steps necessary to get us moving on a more sustainable path going forward. So in that context of really difficult choices, when we released our budget, I think that you can see that HIV/AIDS is a priority for this administration. You know, I did a call with some community members yesterday and walked through this. I'm not going to go through the details of all that today, but I do want you to hear that, you know, HIV/AIDS is an ongoing priority for us. As you know, during the campaign, the president made a commitment to developing a national HIV/AIDS strategy, and we've really been busy doing that since we've been here over the last year. I just want to sort of update you on what we've done. Last year, through the end of last year, I would think of it as our information gathering phase. So we traveled the country. We held 14 HIV/AIDS community discussions in all parts of the country. Our partners at HHS with Dr. Koh, they held 5 additional ones, really trying to the greatest extent possible, listen to the American people and hear about what's going on the ground and their best ideas for moving us forward as a country. We also had an online process, and we're actually actively working on a report that we hope to release soon that synthesizes the common themes we heard, and it'll be released to the public so you can see sort of the overview of what we heard, but it'll really be taken seriously as we move forward to develop this strategy. We've also identified a process where we have a federal HIV interagency working group, and many of our federal partners are here with us today. They're working with me and my office as we develop this strategy. Certainly, Dr. Koh has a central role because we're engaging all the departments that work on HIV/AIDS across the federal government, but of course, HHS has a disproportionate role, and Dr. Koh has been an important leader as we sort of pull together the different aspects of HHS. So as we work on this interagency group, there will be opportunities to engage the public, but also importantly to hear from the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS. So we're just getting started. You know, I want to respond. Some in the community, I think, seem to have this idea that I've written the strategy and I'm waiting to spring it on you, and I can tell you that's not the case. We've actually had a very encouraging process so far just convening our interagency group. But we're really at the beginning. We're planning a meeting at the Department of Health and Human Services in late February that will be open to the public to really update you on our process. We also plan to, as you'll hear about with PACHA, it's organized in subcommittees. There'll be a global subcommittee to continue that ongoing role, but there will be other subcommittees aligned to the President's three goals for the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. So one on reducing HIV incidence, one on getting all people into care, and then the third on reducing HIV-related health disparities. So as this interagency working group pulls together and looks at all the recommendations we received, brings their own expertise, they really have a challenge in doing priority setting. And so we're gonna be planning a webcast or some process to really check in with the PACHA subcommittees to see, you know, as we're going through this priority setting, are we getting it right? We're also planning later in the process when we have a more full document together to check in with the whole interagency working group and the whole PACHA again to see if we're on the right track. We've also promised, you know, once we have the strategy, we'll make it available to the public before it's final. So the public will have a chance to be engaged with that. So I think we're looking at a time frame that, you know, we're going to take as much time as it takes to get it right, but we're also trying to show that some real urgency about getting this done. I hope that we're at the point where we have a draft to share with the public towards the end of May. So again, we've done a lot of work last year. We're getting started, have a great start with this interagency process, but we're really at the beginning. In the next few months, we're gonna be doing important work developing the strategy. And again, I would just emphasize that, you know, we believe that the PACHA is a great, has a lot of expertise that we wanna tap into, and so we'll be looking to you for your leadership to guide us as we pull this together. So now with that, I just want to once again welcome you. We're excited that this day came. We look forward to, as we develop the strategy, but also as we move forward in implementing the strategy, to really relying on the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS to assist us and make sure we stay on the right track. And so with that, now I'd like to introduce my key partner, Dr. Howard Koh, who's the Assistant Secretary for Health at the Department of Health and Human Services.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for that warm introduction, and thank you so much for your dedication and leadership. You're doing such an incredible job on behalf of the nation, and we're very, very proud of you. I also am so honored to be here today and to welcome all of you and to recognize you as leaders in health for this country and the world. I'm honored to recognize your many contributions to public health to date, and now to thank you for offering your leadership to the PACHA. I want to give special thanks to Dr. Gale, our new chair, and all the leadership represented on the new council. And this is such a thrill for me and a historic event for our administration. In my role as the Assistant Secretary for Health, I have responsibilities that include advising our secretary, overseeing 13 offices, including the Office of HIV/AIDS Policy, and 9 presidential and secretarial advisory committees, including the PACHA. And in these capacities, I help mobilize leadership across our department and government on behalf of the American people. So in that capacity, as the Assistant Secretary for Health, over the last number of months, I've had the great privilege of convening the principal leaders in the department, leaders from CDC, NIH, CMS, our Office of Global Health Affairs, from HRSA and SAMHSA, and we are bringing these leaders internally together to foster collaboration and coordination on HIV, to integrate with the leadership of the White House, led by Jeff Crowley, and to work to support Ambassador Eric Goosby in the Office of Global AIDS. As I do this work, I can't help but reflect on the journey that we have taken together in HIV. And you all have impacted on me very profoundly and on my professional life over the last number of decades. I'm a physician who has cared for hundreds of HIV patients over the past 30 years. I'm a former state health commissioner, and I'm a former professor and researcher. And at so many times on this HIV journey, the odds were massive and seemed overwhelming. But leaders like you refused to give up, you stepped forward, and you were willing to lead with passion and compassion, understanding that passion means to suffer, and compassion means to suffer with. On moments like this, I remember so clearly in 1981 being chief medical resident at Boston City Hospital as this new epidemic exploded. At that time, there seemed to be little hope, and there was overwhelming stigma and discrimination, which seemed to make a horrifying situation much worse. I remember so clearly many of those patients struggling with pneumocystis and Kaposi sarcoma and other conditions. But many of you stepped in undaunted and offered new hope for healing. Then as Commissioner of Public Health for Massachusetts from 1997 to 2003, I had the privilege of working with legislators, advocates, and some of the new members on the PACHA here to try to create perfect HIV/AIDS policy in an always imperfect environment. I am grateful for the colleagues I met back then and some of you who are new members of the PACHA who I met back in those days as commissioner in Massachusetts. You refused to get discouraged. You were willing to always be involved, and we are so grateful to you. And then most recently, as a professor at Harvard, I came to learn more about the tremendous global impact of this epidemic and the devastating inequities and global disparities that arise from it. And again, fortunately, there were many heroes, some including new members of the PACHA, who demonstrated the willingness to lead on behalf of health equity for all. And so in my new capacity as the Assistant Secretary for Health, as you have heard, I've been very privileged to join Jeff and members of my department, including especially Christopher Bates, to participate in a series of town hall meetings that have stretched across the country, hearing from people at the front lines, people who have refused to give up and want to embrace this new opportunity and take on new challenges in a new day. And it's been so inspiring to meet these community leaders and now to see all of you before us here. So in summary, the challenge of HIV is a leadership challenge. You leaders have not been afraid to tackle this problem, and you are willing to search for new solutions. Like all public health challenges, HIV continues to be a crisis of heartbreaking proportions. It plays out in the public eye, it impacts a vast array of stakeholders, and requires solutions that lie well beyond the control of any single authority. Treatment advances have occurred, of course, but stigma remains. So in this context, we need leaders like you who speak to the possibility of new hope and are willing to embrace the powerful integration of science and practice and policy to create lasting change. So in summary, today I'm honored to join you to celebrate new hope that's represented through your leadership. With your commitment, we are going to move to a higher level of leadership, rebuild our community in the midst of the suffering, remind everybody that in the face of this challenge, we are all interdependent and all interconnected with promises to keep. This is a shared responsibility. You don't have to be infected to be affected by this virus. Going forward, one way to keep the communication going is to work through our wonderful website, AIDS.gov, which has been sponsored by our federal HIV/AIDS Web Council. This website and this council is promoting the best of cutting-edge new media and social media to get information out to everybody at risk and indeed the entire country. So please visit AIDS.gov to learn more about the council's work. And in that light, we all recognize that coming up is February 7th, National Black HIV/AIDS Awareness Day. This will be one of the many, many events that we'll be working together to help celebrate and promote a new day in terms of public health and HIV/AIDS. I hope that when we look back on today, we will say that this was a day where we truly honored health in its broadest possible dimensions. That is, trying to help all people reach their highest attainable standard for health and trying to reach health that is a state of complete physical, mental, and emotional well-being and not merely the absence of disease and infirmity. So in closing, it's so great to work with all of you. It's a great honor to work with Mr. Crowley and colleagues at the state and local level. And it's also a great, great honor to work with a leader like our Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, who will be swearing in the new members momentarily. I want to tell you that working with the Secretary day in and day out has been a tremendous honor and privilege for me personally and for thousands of us at Health and Human Services. In her time as the Secretary, she has stepped forward in many, many crises, has led our department with great determination and passion. In my conversations with her, I know how deeply committed she is to the interests that we share today and to the issues of HIV testing, treatment, and especially prevention. So in that spirit, I am very, very honored and very proud to introduce to you the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody, and it's a delight to be here with Dr. Koh. I think you can, for those of you who didn't know him before this morning, you can tell by his range of experience and personal interest that he is the right leader at our department for this effort. And I want to thank also Christopher Bates for his role and in the past, but roll up your sleeves, it's just beginning. Howard Koh is one of the main health leaders in our department, and as Assistant Secretary, he does have an opportunity to coordinate a lot of the key initiatives in the agency, and I think it's so important that the HIV/AIDS effort be under his umbrella. No question that Jeff Crowley is doing terrific work as the director of the Office of National AIDS Policy. Jeff and I have worked together on a number of initiatives, and I can tell you he is relentless, which is very good, and tenacious, but constantly focused on the increase of care to people with HIV/AIDS and recognizing that it has to be a part of every health conversation that we have. It can't just be, you know, every once in a while we'll visit this topic. It is an all-day, everyday opportunity. I have to tell you, one of the first standing ovations I got in my role as secretary had nothing to do with anything I had done, but it was the announcement that Dr. Helene Gayle would be the new chair of PACHA. And I told her today I hadn't had an opportunity to meet her, but I figure I'll just say her name on a regular basis and, you know, people will like me a lot better. But it was a real demonstration of her revered status with advocates and workers in this field. And in her new role as chair of PACHA, she is going to have some amazing colleagues. I have to tell you, I read the materials last night and had a chance to read the bios of the new board, and it is a dazzling array of experts and advocates and experienced folks who take this issue very, very seriously, represent a broad array of geography, a balance of gender, and clearly are the right leadership team to have in place at this critical moment. One of the things I'm doing as secretary is visiting our agencies throughout the department, and we have many agencies, but spending some time with the new leadership team, getting a sense of their priorities. And in my visit to NIH, I had a up-close and personal experience about why this project is so important. We were visiting in the clinical unit a young man who had presented himself because of his grandmother, who had some NIH connections. This was a guy who was about 26 years old, and he was nearly dead by the time he got himself connected to a clinical project going on at NIH. He had been in and out of hospitals, in and out of doctor's offices, losing fluid literally by the gallon, had not been recommended along the way that he ever be tested for HIV/AIDS. He had not been carefully and appropriately cared for, in spite of the fact that he was dealing with a whole series of providers and a whole series of hospitals. And it wasn't until he actually got into this program that they literally saved his life. And it was just a reminder about here we are in Washington, D.C., with some of the best medical care around in 2010, and yet this young man was literally a couple of weeks away from death because he was not connected with the right set of treatment. And I always am reminded by the words of Senator Kennedy, who clearly was a great champion in this area, that he used to say, to stand in place is to fall behind. And that, unfortunately, I think is what has happened for a while, particularly with domestic AIDS efforts. We're falling behind. And so part of the president's commitment, part of the budget commitment, part of my commitment as secretary, the assistant secretary, and hopefully the new leaders at PACHA is really to not stand in place any longer. Jeff Crowley's leadership has led to beginning this conversation about developing a national HIV/AIDS strategy to guide the efforts. The president has proposed $3 billion for HIV/AIDS prevention and treatment in the HHS budget for next year to support critical investment in key areas. And we know that part of the problem is Americans, unfortunately, have become pretty complacent. They aren't nearly as worried as they should be. And even though the new infections are holding steady, the share of Americans who say they're afraid of being infected has dropped way off. So we are starting a new CDC initiative, working to increase awareness about how to prevent HIV, reaching out to the whole country, and focusing on groups at disproportionate risk that have been underserved, like racial and ethnic minorities, women, gay, and bisexual men. We know that despite our best efforts, there is still a large stigma with HIV/AIDS. And in some communities, folks are afraid to be tested because their fear of getting beaten up or losing a place to live or facing other kinds of discrimination. They don't want to pick up a flyer about treatment because they're afraid somebody's going to make an assumption. Last year, we struck a big blow against the stigma when we eliminated the HIV/AIDS travel ban in America. Finally, that is gone. And we'll be proud in 2012 to welcome the International AIDS Conference back to the United States. But clearly, there is a lot more work to do in this area. We know that HIV/AIDS is increasingly concentrated in certain communities. Even though African Americans are only a tenth of the United States population, nearly half of every new HIV/AIDS infection is in the African American community. In their lifetimes, 1 in 16 African American men and 1 in 30 African American women will get an HIV diagnosis. And infection rates are equally high for Latinos and American Indians. Some of the highest rates in the United States are right here in Washington, where 3% of adults and adolescents are infected with the virus. So we have a lot of work to see if we can bring these numbers down. And we just launched an innovative partnership between the National Institutes of Health and the DC Health Department. We think we can do a lot of outreach and strategy right here in our own backyard. NIH scientists are going to help Washington, DC reach out to at-risk populations with health screenings, prevention tools, and information about accessing treatment. We're also helping the city track the care it already provides to patients with HIV/AIDS and set up clinics to provide additional care to the underinsured or uninsured patients who need it the most. And finally, we'll be testing some exciting new models for addressing HIV/AIDS in communities that call for annual voluntary HIV testing and immediate antiretroviral treatment for patients who test positive. We think the lessons that we can learn with this kind of intense experiment here will be very helpful taken to scale across the country. And at the same time, we're going to continue our commitment to fighting global AIDS with increased investments in prevention, care, and treatment through PEPFAR, one of the true global health successes of the last administration. But we have to match that commitment here at home, where progress has been much slower in the last few years. So this administration firmly believes that if results don't change, our actions have to change. And that's why we're attacking the domestic HIV/AIDS strategy with new resources, new energy, and a new plan. So the PACHA Council will play a key role in this effort. Not only are you the platform for the administration to share our plans and insights with the public health community and the broader public, but you also are the conduit to carry the community's ideas back to the administration. One of the best parts of the group is that you come from a wide range of backgrounds and experience with experts in domestic and international HIV/AIDS, experts from rural areas and large urban centers, experts representing straight and gay communities. And I'm counting on all of you to keep me up to date on concerns and priorities and, most importantly, your insights. This is a pivotal moment in our country's fight against HIV/AIDS. We can either get used to it, accept it as a permanent feature of our society, settle for merely lengthening lives, or we can double down on our efforts to reduce the spread of the disease, improve treatments, and reach for a vaccine. The president has chosen the second course, and I'm looking forward to working with you to achieve those goals. And now I'd like the members of the council to stand, and if I can find the oath. Okay, let me get my... All righty. I have everything but... There we go. So if you would all raise your right hands, and there'll be a point at which you need to say your own names. All right? I. Your name. I assume all of you said your right names. That I will do solemnly swear. That I will support and defend the Constitution. Of the United States of America, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. Congratulations. Thank you.
Could the members of the PACHA come to the stage? And then we want to take one photo really quick, and then we'll continue with the rest of our program.
We'll do it over here, maybe. Just a hand. Take your
pants off. Yeah, right. Everybody can take their tags off too, so the picture's
clear.
Oh, yeah. No.
Those are all mine. Can I just? Oh, do you have to take
them? I was always the kid with the class sign.
Can we?
Oh, should we just go in front of the podium?
Two rows out in front of the podium.
Okay. And if we could have one row right here on the ground as well. And then I think that
Thank you. Do you want to introduce Dr. Coe? Oh, okay. Great. Thanks, Dr. Coe. I appreciate it very much. Dr. Gale. Okay, you all were hesitant to applaud for me earlier, but she's my shero, so I want you to applaud for her, Dr. Helene Gale.
Thanks, Chris. And first of all, I just want to thank Jeff and James and Chris and everybody who has worked so tirelessly to get us here. As people, I'm sure many people know that this is a committee that a lot of people had an incredible amount of interest in. And, you know, I think the results of all the work that people did to put this council together is incredible. And as I look around and see the different faces, both of the people who are part of PACHA, but also those who are going to be engaged in the work that this council does, I think it's really incredible. For me, it's a real homecoming in many ways as I look around and see the people who are part of my history. In fact, it's a little frightening, but and as Secretary Sebelius was talking about the standing ovation that she got, it was, yeah, I thought about the wisdom of doing this. It was nice, you know, I was involved in HIV and AIDS for a long time, and now I'm doing something somewhat different, working on international humanitarian development, and I could have left well enough alone with people having a good opinion of the work that I'd done in the past. But, you know, really, this really spoke to me, and it really means a lot for me to be part of this and this effort. You know, I have spent a mixed part my career between domestic and international HIV, and I think, you know, there is no one is more important than the other. It's all part of this global epidemic that we are committed to making a difference in. But I do think, as Secretary Sebelius said, some of the challenges here in this nation, the richest nation on the face of the earth, and the unacceptable number of HIV infections that continue to occur every year in this nation, and the number of people, even with all we have, who still don't have the kind of access to treatment, and the stigma, and all the other things that we know still exist in this country. So, you know, I really want to redouble my effort and work with all of you to really be able to make a difference here in the United States, but also to continue to think about what is our obligation around the rest of the world. So again, I think it's not an either or. It really is thinking about how do we as a nation do the best that we can. You know, I think the spirit of what PACHA is all about is also incredibly inspiring for me. It's a group of volunteers. There's a lot of people who are doing this professionally, full time, but this committee is a group of people who come together as volunteers to be able to help guide
the overall U.S. government efforts. And, you know, I know all of you are busy people. You wouldn't be asked if you weren't busy people who have other things that make you very valuable. But you're giving up your time to be part of an effort that I think will really enrich all of us and make us a better nation. You know, and as I look around and see the different people like David Holtgrave, who I work together with at CDC, or Cornelius, who we've all in many varieties of our life worked together with, or Ernest Darko, who I worked when he was first starting his new organization in Botswana, and, you know, and others, Rosie Perez, who we're very honored to have you lend your celebrity status to this issue. You know, and I could go on and on about people that I've worked with. It's just incredible to see this group of people come together around this incredible goal, and so I thank all of you, Phil Wilson, you're our mentor in so many different ways. And yeah, I could continue to go on and on, but I won't. It's incredible the group of people who have come together. This is going to be an incredibly important role, and people have talked about what we will do to help guide the overall U.S. government efforts. We're not writing it, we're not doing all the work, but I think we can't underestimate how important it is to have a group like ours to be able to be an honest broker in many ways, to represent the different communities, to represent the different interests, to represent your different experience to bring to bear. Having worked 20 years in the federal government, I know what it's like to need to have that inside and outside to be able to make sure that what happens comes together in a way that really responds to the American public, and make sure that we keep that sort of accountability. So our role is that role of being the outside voice that helps those on the inside who are equally committed to this to make sure that we come together in the kind of partnership that is the check and balance that is really so much a part of our democracy. Yeah, I think that in accepting the Secretary's challenge, it's going to be important that we all keep motivated, make sure that we all do our roles in whatever way that we can so that we really are living up to the challenges that both Assistant Secretary and Secretary Sebelius tossed out to us. We're going to talk a lot about the different roles, and I think Chris and Jeff are going to speak a lot more about what our specific roles are. But I think, again, it is coming together in a way that really makes this effort move forward and is bigger and better than any of us. All of us are thinking about the situation in Haiti. I think it's on a lot of people's minds, definitely on my mind. It's what our organization is involved in some ways disproportionately right now. And I was thinking about some of the work that we're doing in Haiti and how important it has been that the communities themselves have come to the table to be very much a part of the response. And I look at that in some ways, it's analogous. That's who we are. We're part of representing a variety of different communities, and us being part of that response and being able to be a voice for that response is going to continue to be incredibly important. The last thing I'll say is that I think the importance of us engaging in this process in a way that makes us recognize and feel like this, that we have real ownership, because when this, particularly the national strategy, is done, our role is also going to be incredibly important ambassadors for this, because a strategy alone is only as good as its ability to be accepted, its ability to be communicated, and its ability to be implemented. So I think as we think about the work that we have going forward, it is just as important that none of us sit back and be critical about what those people inside are doing, and recognizing that this is something that we have to own if we're going to have this strategy actually mean something and be a driver for change in the diverse communities that we represent and for making a real change in HIV in this nation. So, you know, again, all I want to say is how excited I am to be here. I am absolutely honored that I was asked to play a leadership role in this, but we're all going to be leaders in this effort. And I think we want to make this something that is important, that is meaningful, but we also want to make sure that it's something that's fun. I look forward forward to getting to know all of you all in the time that we serve together. And I think this is going to be something that we all look back on and recognize we were part of something incredibly important that made a huge difference in the lives of people in this nation, but also around the world. So thank you. It's an honor to be here, and I look forward to working together.
Well, new council members, you're about to experience something that we have done since the beginning of the PACHA, and that is to allow an opportunity for members of the public to raise questions and concerns, and we call it the public comment period. And during this time, we welcome anyone from the public, or if you as PACHA members might want to make a statement, this would be an opportunity for you to do that as well. So, I know that we have one written statement that we've received in our office, but I did not know whether or not there were others and whether or not there were people who wanted to make oral public statements at this time. Yes, ma'am, please come forward. We ask that at least you introduce yourself and make your statement. The microphone, thank you.
Baltimore, Maryland. I'm a member of a group called Life Link. Can everyone hear me?
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to talk into the mic. Okay. There you go.
I was trying to stand.
I understand. That's okay. Good.
But I did send in a comment that I wanted to address. And can y'all hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, my name is Wanda Commander, and I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I was diagnosed with HIV. 22 years ago. HIV-positive people are living longer and healthier lives now. People over 50 are one of the fastest-growing segments of the HIV population. The problem is many older people living with HIV and AIDS have age-related comorbidities, and I am concerned with the quality of life as well as the quality of the continuum of care for this segment of the HIV community. And solution, enhanced government accountability is needed to strengthen the management and the coordination of structures to ensure the appropriate response to the needs of the people over 50 living with HIV are being met.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Any other brave souls? Yes, ma'am, all the way in the back. Oh, sir. Well, there was a hand behind you, too, that went up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. You're here.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Bishop John Selders, and I'm an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. Today, I represent the United Church AIDS Network, also called UCAN. Founded in 1987, UCAN's mission is to build a network of people, congregations, and organizations within and beyond the United Church of Christ to respond to the United States and global AIDS pandemic through caregiving, prevention, interventions, and advocacy efforts. At this first meeting, we wanted to be here under this new administration, and we'd like to acknowledge this is what we call in religious circles a Kairos moment. That is a moment filled with opportunity and possibility and promise. This is a moment that must be grasped, we believe, in order to mobilize our country's moral and political will and the human and organizational and financial resources to respond in strategic ways to the HIV/AIDS epidemic that continues to devastate so many in our communities and take so many lives. If we fail to act, this moment surely will pass us by. As we all know, every 9.5 minutes, another person in the United States will become infected with HIV. Before the meeting is over, more than 15 Americans will become infected with HIV. This presents a challenge to all of us to work even more creatively and collaboratively. And as a faith-based network, we are committed to bringing critical presence where it is needed the most and working smarter and harder with others to realize a vision of health and wholeness for everybody. Having said that, the United States HIV epidemic demands leadership and commitment from the highest levels of government. And although history has shown us that government cannot nor should not respond to this epidemic alone, partnerships with community-based, faith-based, and other organizations are needed even more critical if we are to reduce HIV incidence and respond to the needs of our neighborhoods, colleagues, relatives, church members, and friends who are living with HIV. This mission is an urgent one today, and it is urgent as ever before. So you can challenge this council, a body of dedicated individuals, that you work strategically in this current political environment to advance policies and programs that prevent new cases of HIV infection, provide universal access to treatment, and offer compassionate care to people who are living with HIV and infected by HIV. And lastly, that you intentionally solicit ongoing input from populations most at risk of HIV and those organizations like ours that serve them to shape your thinking and strategies and to make the most of this opportune moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend. Did you want to make a comment? Okay.
My name is Regan Hoffman, and I'm the editor.
Come in closer.
Oh, closer? Okay.
Yes.
Good morning.
Great.
My name is Regan Hoffman, and I'm the editor-in-chief of PAWS Magazine and PAWS.com, and also a woman living with HIV for 15 years. And I just wanted to say, personally and on behalf of the hundreds of people that contact our magazine every day, that we are so grateful for this leadership and the administration, and I am so excited about the formation of this council, and we would love to serve as a resource, and I hope that I can communicate directly from all of the people that communicate to us the very many and real concerns that we have, and I know that the leadership on this council will address this. And it's a very exciting time, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Reed.
Good morning. I'm Carl Schmidt, Deputy Executive Director of the AIDS Institute here in Washington. There's an issue of critical importance that needs to be addressed now, and that's the emergency funding for the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. The severe economic downturn has jeopardized state contributions to many ADAPs, while job losses have resulted in many people losing their health insurance, which places greater strains on the Ryan White program, including ADAP. Enrollment in ADAPs has also increased due to intense efforts to identify HIV people through testing programs. People are living longer, and there's still 56,000 new infections every year. NASDAQ estimates that the average monthly growth for ADAPs in 2009 was over 1,200 new clients. That's an 80% increase from the prior year. While passage of meaningful health care reform remains our ultimate goal, and it can relieve some of the stress on the Ryan White program, expanded coverage under even the best scenario wouldn't even occur until 2013. We need a response now to address the immediate crisis in several states, which have waiting lists or facing other shortfalls. While the President proposed and the Congress approved a $20 million increase this past year, it's far from what is needed to keep up with the increased number of ADAP clients and falling state contributions. And the $20 million increase that he proposed yesterday will not flow to the states until April 2011, which is more than a year from now. In order to meet current needs, the AIDS Institute is requesting an additional $126 million in FY10 emergency funds for the ADAP supplemental. We ask you to act at this meeting. Time is of the essence. We urge you to ask President Obama to request from the Congress emergency support for the ADAP supplemental this year. A few years ago, when we were facing long ADAP waiting lists, Pacha responded and urged President Bush to address the situation, which he did with $20 million in emergency funding. Today, our economy and state budgets are in a much worse situation. We trust you will respond expeditiously. Thank you.
Thank you. Ron.
Thank you. My name is Ronald Johnson. I'm the Deputy Executive Director of AIDS Action Council, which is located here in the District of Columbia, and to Dr. Gale and to the new members of PACHA. And on behalf of the members of AIDS Action, we want to congratulate you on your appointment, and we look forward to this new, very, and we trust, reinvigorated PACHA to really begin to address its work. And we note that you begin your work as we approach in 4 months the beginning of the 30th year of this epidemic here in the United States. No one thought at that time that we would be at this point. And that is one of the many issues that underscore the importance and critical nature of your work, as particularly as you develop and work to develop and implement a national HIV/AIDS strategy. The first speaker spoke about HIV and aging, and that's also what I wanted to speak on, and since repetition helps drive a point. But in addition to what the first speaker said, I would highlight the prevention needs and the fact that when we talk about HIV/AIDS over 50, it is not only long-term survivors like myself who are aging, have aged into over 50, but also those who are newly infected. And we must take into consideration that there are people 50, 60, 70 years of age who are becoming newly infected with HIV. And we need research, we need prevention messages and interventions that would address this population. And we are hopeful that as you approach your contributions to the national HIV/AIDS strategy, you will consider those people over 50 who are living with and are vulnerable to HIV infection. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Thelma King Thiel, the chairman and CEO of the Hepatitis Foundation International, better known as the Liver Lady. I have been working on the front lines for 40 years promoting liver health among the hepatitis community. But with the incidence of co-infection, we are becoming more involved with the HIV community. And looking at the broader picture, we're adding a component that has been kind of missing along the line of changing behaviors. People really don't know how important their liver is and are participating in behaviors, and we have to motivate them to really assess their own risk behaviors and to change them. To be tested, to get an individual off the chair, they have to understand why. Unfortunately, HIV and hepatitis are silent diseases, and when you don't know that you have something, it's very difficult to get people to change those behaviors. So we look forward to working with you, Dr. Holtgrave and Jeff. We've met with these folks before, and we really are happy to be involved, and good luck with the PACHA.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Ariana Childs-Graham, and I'm the Senior International Policy Associate with the Sexuality Information and Education Council of the United States, also known as CICUS. On behalf of CICUS, please allow me to thank you for your service on PACHA and allowing for the opportunity for public comment here today. We are pleased that the Obama administration has taken several steps to promote and fund programs to improve sexual and reproductive health of young people. Evidence has clearly returned to the helm of the federal government. We welcome the elimination of dedicated funding for abstinence-only until marriage programs and funding that was reprogrammed for more comprehensive approaches to sex education. In these times of tight budgets, we are grateful to the President for his FY11 budget increase funding for the new Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative. However, by focusing the funding on teen pregnancy prevention and not including the equally important health issues of STIs, including HIV, we think the administration has missed an opportunity to provide comprehensive sex education that promotes healthy behaviors and relationships for all young people, including LGBT youth. Other negative health outcomes stem from the same behavior of unprotected or underprotected sex, and that is the behavior we need to change. As funding for this new prevention program for teens continues, and as the prevention portion of the National HIV/AIDS strategy comes to fruition, we hope that PACHA will urge that comprehensive sex education be a foundation for prevention efforts moving forward. With regard to the U.S. response to the global HIV/AIDS epidemic, we are greatly encouraged with the conceptual framework for the PEPFAR prevention portfolio as mapped out in the PEPFAR strategy documents, including the commitment to, quote, scaling up high-impact, evidence-based combination prevention approaches and addressing structural factors such as existing economic, social, legal, and cultural conditions which contribute to increased risk for HIV infection. In order to operationalize these commitments, it is imperative that clear, comprehensive, and consistent guidance is available. Communications from the Office of the Global AIDS Coordinator to the field come in various forms. However, issuing new policy guidances would serve in alleviating confusion on the ground, providing the lens to interpret the mandates outlined in the legislation and strategy documents, while still mindful of this country-specific response that's championed by OGAC. OGAC is already developing a guidance document regarding IDUs, and we hope that additional guidances are forthcoming and that PACHA can support this effort. CECAS is excited and ready to work with this new PACHA to ensure that all young people here in the United States and abroad are getting the information they need to make healthy and responsible decisions over the course of their lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is James Sykes. I am Director of Global Affairs, Global Programs Policy and Advocacy at the AIDS Institute. And I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome all of the new members of PACHA and to thank you for volunteering your time to this great cause. Today, I'd also like to share with you our comments on the President's Global Health Initiative, the strategy mandated by the Tom Lantos and Henry Hyde United States Global Leadership Against HIV/AIDS, Tuberculosis and Malaria Reauthorization Act of 2008, or PEPFAR 2 as it is commonly referred. Since its inception in 2003, the PEPFAR program has achieved unprecedented success. Approaching 3 million people are now on antiretroviral treatment compared to the 50,000 when the program started in 2003. And millions of new infections have been prevented. Millions of orphans and vulnerable children are receiving care and support as a part of this program. To quote Ambassador Goosby, the millions of lives that have been touched are a testament to the effectiveness of this collective effort and to the generosity of the American people, unquote. Despite the success of PEPFAR, it is striking the need that still exists in countries around the world. According to the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations, 1.02 billion people across the world are hungry. Every day, almost 16,000 children die from hunger-related causes. One child every 5 seconds. According to UNICEF, an estimated 9.2 million children under the age of 5 will die this year, nearly 26,000 per day, or 18 every minute. The vast majority of these deaths will be due to neonatal disorders, pneumonia, and diarrhea. 2 million people will still die from AIDS this year. Malaria will claim approximately 900,000, and tuberculosis will claim another 1.5 million lives. In his first State of the Union address just last week, President Obama referenced the Global Health Initiative by stating that, and I quote, "We are helping developing countries to feed themselves and continuing the fight against HIV/AIDS. And we are launching a new initiative that will give us the capacity to respond faster and more effectively to bioterrorism or infectious disease, a plan that will counter threats at home and strengthen public health abroad," unquote. The AIDS Institute applauds the administration's commitment to global health. And while we fully support the strategy to expand the plan's impact or the program's impact within infected and affected populations around the world, we are concerned that without significant increases in funding, the program will not keep pace with the needs of as many people as possible. The AIDS Institute calls on the President and Congress to fully fund the Global Health Initiative. Given the realities of the economic situation in which this nation finds itself, we know hard choices will have to be made. It is our hope that we will choose to help save lives, build economies, and strengthen human security through addressing the world's major health crises. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name's Carol Tresson. I'm the Executive Director of AIDS Alliance for Children, Youth, and Families. We represent the Part D community, so the community of women, adolescents, families, and their providers who are affected by HIV in the United States. On behalf of AIDS Alliance, I really want to congratulate you on the makeup of the council. It's just wonderful to see such a diverse group both in gender and race and special populations. I especially want to call out the fact that you represent youth, have youth representation on the panel, and of course a fair representation of women on the panel, our special populations. I'm also really pleased that you have representation from across the country, including Puerto Rico. And I think this is just something that's great to see, something that really is inclusive and really welcoming. And we at AIDS Alliance will really support your efforts here and be a conduit for communication back and forth with our populations. One of the things that I want to ask you to consider as you go through your work over the next couple of years is the continuing need for comprehensive care for persons with HIV in the United States. One of the things that concerns us is that there are estimates of anywhere from 30 to 60% or more of people who know their HIV diagnosis not in care. And that speaks to me that there's something wrong with our care systems if we have that many people out of care. And then you multiply that with current plans for test and treat and expanded testing. And our concerns are that we're just going to add to that end of the equation, that there are people who know their diagnosis but not actively engaged in effective care. And to really think about what are the strategies that get people into care, but more importantly, retain them in care. And the Part D providers have a long history there of comprehensive care that includes family-centered care and all of the support services and wraparound services that are necessary to keep people in care. And we understand the budgetary constraints and the economic realities, but I think we still need to figure out a way to make sure that the appropriate services are in place once people are tested to get them into care and keep them into care. So thank you for convening such a wonderful council, and AIDS Alliance will go a long way in supporting your work and communicating that back to our community. Thank you.
Bambi.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Bambi Gaddis. I'm really here on two accounts. I'm here as a member of the National Black HIV/AIDS Women's Network. I'm here also as a woman who lives in the South. And I have a few brief comments. The National Black HIV/AIDS Women's Network congratulates all the members of the Council of PACHA, and we look forward to working with you in the future. While the most recent CDC data reflects that HIV infection is the leading cause of death for black women 25 to 34, and the third leading cause of death for black women 35 to 44, and the fourth leading cause of death for black women 45 to 54, African Americans, women, still remain invisible. As a woman that lives in the South and as a director of a nonprofit organization, we're continuously perplexed by the growing rate of new infections among our youth and among our women, particularly those that are in rural communities. And we are asking as a network that we make a special effort, a continued effort, to reach out to disenfranchised populations in areas that to date have not, and populations who to date have not really had a voice. And so we look forward to working with the members of PACHA to ensure that the concerns of African American women and those of us that live in the South are not left behind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Suzanne Miller. I'm here on behalf of the National Coalition of STD Directors, which represents STD program directors and health departments across the nation. As this committee looks toward the development of a national HIV/AIDS strategy with the primary goals of 1, reducing HIV incidence, 2, increasing access to care and optimizing health outcomes, and 3, reducing HIV-related health disparities, a core element of this plan must be STD prevention, testing, and treatment. As we are all well aware, there is a strong link between HIV and other STDs. Persons with an STD have a 2- to 5-fold increased risk of acquiring HIV if exposed to the virus through sexual contact, and HIV-infected persons who are co-infected with another STD are more likely to transmit HIV through sexual contact than other HIV-infected persons. The current trends of syphilis are particularly troubling and have serious implications for HIV infection. Throughout the 1990s, rates of syphilis steadily decreased, reaching an all-time low in 2000. Since then, however, the syphilis rate has increased by 76%, with men who have sex with men bearing the brunt of new infections. In 2008, men who have sex with men accounted for 63% of all syphilis cases, while in 2000, MSM accounted for only 4% of syphilis cases. The racial disparities that exist for gonorrhea are the greatest for any reportable STD. Young African-American women experience the highest rates of this disease, and African-American men aged 15 to 19 experience the greatest disparities. They are 39 times more likely than white men in this age group to have gonorrhea. Rates of STDs continue to rise to record levels year after year, while federal funding for CDC's Division of STD Prevention has steadily declined since FY 2003. In addition, drastic state and local budget cuts have further hampered the ability of health departments to respond to the increasing demand for STD services. The need for federal resources and leadership on STD issues is greater now more than ever before. We are very grateful for the proposed increase in the President's FY 2011 budget and will work with Congress to ensure the greatest possible funding increase for the Division of STD Prevention. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I see my last three hands, okay? Now I see a bunch. Okay. Four hands, five, okay. Woo, all right. We'll go on. Come on now.
Thank you. Okay. I'm Nancy Bernstein, Executive Director of the National AIDS Housing Coalition. The NAC looks forward to working with the Council on all the laudable goals raised this morning. Another matter of urgency that I want to bring to your attention is the imminent imposition of the 24-month lifetime cap on the use of Ryan White funding for housing. Eviction notices have begun to go out in jurisdictions across the country, and housing alternatives are simply not available. So homelessness is a real danger for those people approaching the cap. Powerful research is available documenting housing's role in better individual and community health outcomes, and we hope that PACHA and all the strong proponents of structural interventions that are on the council will turn their immediate attention to this critical issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So there. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Remember your number. Okay.
Good morning, and congratulations to all the PACHA committee members and to the administration for making a great start in addressing the epidemic. My name is Eli Kem. I am the executive director of New York Presbyterian System Select Health and HIV Special Needs Plan in New York City. I just want to bring to the committee's attention a subtlety, I think, that needs to be highlighted in treatment, and that is that although we have been very successful in treatment through the use of antiretroviral therapies, many people living with HIV who have been in treatment are now at risk for heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, and other illnesses that are out there. I had one patient say to me, "I don't want my tombstone to read, 'I died with an undetectable viral load,'" meaning that his treatment was great for HIV, but that's where it ended. And I'm gonna just make the point that antiretroviral therapy is the beginning of HIV care, but it is not the end of care, and we should address the full range of health care for those living with HIV. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jenny Collier, and I'm representing the Ryan White Medical Providers Coalition today as their convener. And I want to first congratulate all of the new members and the administration on a really fabulous gathering and call to action that I heard this morning from every speaker that presented. The coalition was founded about 3 years ago to represent Part C programs and providers across the nation in as many now as 44 states that are providing really quality care to folks who need that, who are HIV and AIDS infected. And One of the things that I think the success of the Ryan White program has been that we try to promote is the concept of medical home. And I heard that echoed today in Dr. Koh and Secretary Sebelius's comments. And I think it's something that we can look to promote as we go forward in all of our collective work around the national HIV/AIDS strategy and the administration's proposals. But you know that home is at risk, as we all know, in these dark economic times. Just as the previous speaker said, you know, people are getting into care sometimes, not always. And then when they come to our whole person care, which includes both medical care and behavioral health care and the support services and the ways to keep people in care, those places are shutting down. And while we're extremely grateful to the administration for increasing appropriations, or requesting an increase in appropriations for Part C in its budget, we know that these are stark economic times for states and localities. And so I hope that we can both build on the success of the Ryan White programs and showcase that medical home to the nation, because it's something that's very special in this community that I think other folks during this continued healthcare debate can learn from, but that also that we pay attention to the fact that that home is at risk, like many of our actual homes are in the United States, and that we make sure to keep up our home and try to work together to make sure that our successes stay real. Thank you.
Three. Who was number three? Come on.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Laura Hanen, the Director of Government Relations for the National Alliance of State and Territorial AIDS Directors. And I wanted to echo Carl's comments about the AIDS crisis that's going on in our country as we're trying to develop the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. And as health departments are identifying more people who don't know their status, we have 10 states in this country that have closed their AIDS. We have two states that have lowered their enrollment and had to kick people off their programs. And given the state budget crises and the fact that states cut $170 million out of their budgets for HIV and AIDS last year, we're really seeing a crisis. And I know that ADAP has been in crisis sort of chronically for many, many years. But one of the reasons why the crisis hasn't been as optically large is because the states have stepped up over the last number of years, and our pharmaceutical partners have stepped up in providing deeper discounts and rebates, such that since we've been negotiating with them since 2003, the programs have saved $827 million. So for our, we just want to, once again, we're taking our plea to Congress, my southern states and my western states and my low, medium, and high incidence states have really asked us to take on the challenge of trying to get more money in fiscal year 2010. We received a $20 million increase that's going to go out on April 1st, but it's not going to address our waiting lists that are going to continue to grow as people around the country are finding out their status and are seeking services, as well as people who have lost their jobs and need these services. So we just wanted to thank the PACHA, congratulate the PACHA, and we know you have a Herculean effort ahead of you as you try to develop the National HIV/AIDS Strategy and work with the interagency working group. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Kim Crump. I'm a policy officer with the HIV Medicine Association of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. And on behalf of our members, we want to congratulate the new appointees of the PACHA and offer ourselves as a resource in your important work. We represent more than 3,600 frontline medical providers and researchers dedicated to the field of HIV medicine from across the country. And in addition, a key project of the IDSA and the HIVMA is the Center for Global Health Policy, which provides a mechanism for physicians and scientists working in global HIV and TB to join the policy discussion about effective use of U.S. funding for addressing the global HIV/AIDS and TB epidemics. And we applaud the President's commitment to the development of a national HIV/AIDS strategy that we hope will signal a strengthened national commitment to the battle against HIV/AIDS. HIV clinicians and researchers will play a critical role in the implementation of the strategy, so their input in the developing and refining the strategy will therefore be essential to ensuring its success. We have submitted our complete recommendations to the Office of National AIDS Policy for priority areas of action to achieve the strategy's three core goals, and those include a prominent focus on earlier diagnosis and treatment through routine HIV testing and linkage to quality HIV care and treatment throughout the healthcare system, aggressive action to address the looming shortage of HIV clinicians, including recruitment and support for minority physicians, and that the strategy should also highlight the imperative of addressing provider reimbursement issues that threaten availability of HIV care under Medicare and Medicaid. Promotion and expansion of evidence-based prevention measures such as syringe exchange, increased access to comprehensive coordinated care through medical homes for patients with HIV through improved coordination of federal program resources, reduced administrative burden, and adequate resources to support the delivery of care, and lastly, a robust research agenda that includes creative ways to support cross-cutting research that will closely examine the issues critical to meeting the president's three goals, such as the role of stigma in initiating and staying in care, barriers for patients to access and staying engaged in care, and the long-term impact of HIV disease and its treatment on the aging process. So we thank you for your consideration of our views and look forward to working with you on the development and implementation of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy.
Thank you.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is David Bryden. I'm Senior Policy Officer with the HIVMA IDSA Center for Global Health Policy. I want to welcome the convening of PACHA and congratulate the new members and welcome the expertise from everyone on the panel. I rise to express concern that for the second year in a row we have a budget proposal from the administration that is a single-digit increase for PEPFAR, $141 million for FY 2011, a 2% increase. That is not enough to preserve the vital momentum in HIV treatment scale-up, nor is it enough to fund important new HIV prevention innovations in the developing world, including in the Caribbean. And while HIV/AIDS treatment has expanded dramatically in recent years, only 40% of eligible HIV-infected patients have access to life-saving drugs. HIV/AIDS is the number one killer of women of reproductive age, and currently only a third of pregnant women currently have access to ARV drugs that prevent transmission of the virus to their children. And this fuels an HIV/AIDS epidemic among children in the developing world. We welcome the administration's desire to fully integrate these programs, but by proposing a cut in the U.S. contribution to the Global Fund, this could slow global momentum and miss an opportunity to leverage a stronger global response. The budget proposal could imperil the fragile gains made over the last decade in treating HIV, and it could force a Sophie's choice between prevention and treatment.
Thank you. Number six. Who was number six? Okay, while you think about that, number, oh, seven, come on. Yeah, come on up.
Hello, everyone. I guess I'm a newly sworn in member of PACHA. Hello to all my fellow PACHA and community members of this nation and the global community who are here. It's nice to see some familiar faces. In December, Mr. Bass, Ms. Gale, and everyone here, there was a meeting on youth and HIV that we planned and facilitated. And as it's not shocking, there's a wide range of barriers that youth from a variety of populations face that contribute to disparities. Homeless youth, queer youth, youth from racial and ethnic minorities, foster youth, and so forth and so forth. A youth population that I specifically want us to address as PACHA and as a national and global community is our LGBTQ youth, which includes LGBTQ youth of color and LGBTQ youth from immigrant families. And I want us to think really hard about the ways in which HIV gets into our communities. What are these doors that already exist that are wide open through which HIV is entering? And for me, what I'm seeing, I identify as a queer youth. What I'm seeing in my community of queer youth of color, queer youth from immigrant families, is this epidemic of youth feeling like they're not worth anything in this country, that we grow up thinking and hearing messages day to day that we are second-class citizens. We see it either explicitly or through subtle messaging in our schools, in the way sex ed is taught in our schools is very heteronormative and heterosexist, and is showing that, okay, anal sex, it's not existent, or if it is, only females and males have it. In the way, don't ask, don't tell laws and marriage laws are enacted in our country. One way I feel like we can help our queer youth, of course, is by looking at HIV care, HIV prevention, and so forth. But there are, if we're talking about evidence-based, and scientific studies out that they're proving effective methods to help our queer youth prevent HIV in our communities, is looking at the way family support does or does not exist for our queer youth. And there's a lot of great, great work going on out there that's showing that youth who come from accepting families, and we all define families in many different ways, but however we define family, queer youth who come from accepting families are far more likely to have lower instances of substance abuse and mental health issues and HIV/AIDS rates than youth who come from rejecting or ambivalent families. And the data is out there. And there's a lot of people out there doing great work with families. And as someone who's been doing queer activism and gender sexuality work, both in the States and in India, in an ever-globalized society, we see the differences how countries are different, but in an ever-globalized society, there are so much commonalities that are happening between queer populations across the globe, across borders. And one thing that's common for all folks, be it in this country, in India, in the global South, in westernized nations, in families, in communities in the US who are from immigrant populations or people who've been here for multiple generations, is that families play an important part in our queer youth lives and affect how we make our decisions, be it if we're gonna have unsafe sex or if we're gonna become IV drug users and so forth. And so I would love us as Pachas to think about how important it is to support initiatives out there that look at how we can help families support their queer youth. And families who might be rejecting of their queer youth are not lost. There's hope for families that currently reject their queer youth to eventually become accepting. And so I would love for us to think about how can we support programs where people like me who come from rejecting families can survive and thrive in a world even more so where we have to help our families cope with the fact that we have a queer youth and just give our queer youth a sense that we are worth something in this society and we are contributing members and that we're fabulous. And we're here to stay. So please support programs for our families. Thank you.
Okay, our last two comments from 7 and 8. Last two from 7 and 8.
Good morning. My name is Nana Khanna. I am a new member of Pacha. And I wanted to just say that as an HIV-positive woman and coordinator of the U.S. Positive Women's Network, which is a national membership body of HIV-positive women and transgender women working for responsive policies in the U.S., I am personally committed and the PWN is committed to ensuring that community participation in our federal policy development goes beyond PACHA. If anybody has ideas or suggestions about how to do that, the PWM will be doing things like briefing calls to make sure the community is up to date and informed. We also look forward to working with media partners and anybody else to make sure that community concerns, particularly the needs of people living with HIV and those vulnerable to HIV, are brought to the table. And we look forward to working with all of you moving forward.
That I'm the last comment of the public comment period, but I just want to congratulate all of my colleagues who are joining the Pacha Committee. I know and I stand comfortable and confident in the leadership that is represented on this committee. But I would be remiss if I didn't come forward and say that the first thing that I hope that this Pacha Committee is able to hopefully, hopefully lead us through over the next coming months this comprehensive health care reform enactment. And even if comprehensive health care reform enactment takes a little longer than we expect, then maybe we can lead the way in enacting the Early Treatment for HIV Act. Because I stand here as a 30-year-old man who happens to be employed at Harlem United Community AIDS Center as a senior director for federal policy, but my reality is that I'm a 30-year-old man living with AIDS, but I'm a lucky one. I've always had access to health care. I've come from a family that's really loved and supported me along the way. But I can tell you that I know at least 50 others that I see on a daily basis that don't have the basic fundamental access to care and treatment that I have. And another year without access to care is much too long. So whatever we need to do to mobilize to get comprehensive health care reform enacted this year, I stand here ready and willing to do whatever I can to help. But we can't allow another year to go by without health care and allowing additional individuals that look like me. They might be a little bit bigger, might be a little bit smaller, might be a little bit older, but many of my community members are dying every day. And I want everybody in this room to help not make that happen anymore. Thanks.
I'd like to thank everyone for your comments. I'd also like to just change the agenda a little bit. Many of you who have come today are seeing the back of the heads of the PACHA members. So what I'm going to just take liberties and say that each PACHA member stand, face the audience, and introduce yourself. Just say your name, and I think many of you might know your affiliation, but you can say your affiliation as well. I think that'd be great. Thank you, Phil.
I'm Phil Wilson. I'm the president and CEO of the Black AIDS Institute.
Hold your applause till the end.
Malika Saadasar, I'm the executive director of the Rebecca Project for Human Rights.
Dawn Averett Bridge, founder and chair of the Well Project.
David Holtgrave from Johns Hopkins University.
Kathy Hires, CEO of AIDS Alabama.
Rosie Perez, actor, activist, and member of Latino Commission on AIDS.
Good morning, Cornelius Baker. I'm the National Policy Advisor for the National Black Gay Men's Advocacy Coalition, Senior Communications Advisor at the AED Center on AIDS and Community Health.
Good morning, I'm Nana Khanna with World and the Positive Women's Network.
Good morning, I'm Robert Greenwald. I'm Director of the Health Law and Policy Programs at Harvard Law School and of the Treatment Access Expansion Project.
Good morning, 10ZS. Mario Perez, I'm the Director of the LA County Office of AIDS Programs and Policy.
Good morning, I'm Doug Michaels. I'm the President and CEO of OraSure Technologies.
Morning, I'm Doug Brooks, Vice President of Health Services at the Justice Resource Institute and Executive Director of JRI Health and the Sydney Boreham Health Center in Boston, and I'm also a person living with HIV.
Good morning, I'm Jim Kim. I'm a co-founder and trustee of Partners in Health and currently president of Dartmouth College, which is way up in New Hampshire, which is why I'm late today.
My name is Kevin Frost. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of AMFAR, the Foundation for AIDS Research.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Ernest Darko, Chairman and Founding Partner of Broadreach Healthcare.
Good morning. My name is Sandra Torres Rivera from Bill's Kitchen, Executive Director from Bill's Kitchen in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Good morning, my name is Humberto Cruz. I'm the director of the New York State Department of Health AIDS Institute.
Pat Garcia, Northwestern University. I direct the Women's HIV Program and the Illinois Perinatal HIV Hotline.
Yate Ebene, my name is Jack Jackson Jr., principal at the Agassiz Group in Phoenix, Arizona, and member of the Navajo Nation.
My name's EJ Jack, and I'm a frontline worker for Nebraska AIDS Project.
Hi, I'm Praveen Basavia, and I'm a former Clinton Fellow for Service in India and with MDIL, a startup public health social enterprise in India.
Sorry. Hi, I'm Michael Horberg, Director of HIV/AIDS for Kaiser Permanente and a board member of the HIV Medicine Association and an HIV clinician.
Thank you, and now you can applaud. Well, now we can conclude our public portion of the day. We're going to take them off and flog them and get them ready for these four or five meetings this year that are going to be powerful and dynamic. I look forward to all of our public partners to return to PACHA meetings in the future. This was their inauguration today in terms of public comment period. I think it will probably be less peaceful in future meetings to come, but we're going to enjoy the civility of today and look forward to seeing all of you again in the near future. Thank you and good day.